I had not intended to keep our distinguished keynoters prisoner while I make these brief closing observations. Let me just say that our president, Dick Solomon, and I have penned some views on all the themes of this conference, which you have in your packet, as a matter of fact, in a version which will appear in the Christian Science Monitor editorial tomorrow, I think, as Dick mentioned earlier today. So I'm not going to repeat what's in that. I've taken a number of themes from our conference today, and I'll tick them off very quickly. It's been a long and full and very rich day. But let me just tick off the themes that, to me, are the most important from our day's proceedings. The first theme is that it's not either or. It's not force or diplomacy. It's not military power in a vacuum, nor can it be diplomacy in a vacuum. You need power to conduct diplomacy. The way Brent Scowcroft put it is the way I think we should all retain from today's proceedings. This is an hour for grand strategy. And I would underscore his words. And grand strategy is the integration of all the components of national power and the coalitions of power that we can build, as all of our speakers have been emphasizing. A grand strategy is not something that you can sort of select in a vacuum. It is not like going out to buy a pair of designer jeans or a new SUV. Grand strategy is related to the instruments of power you have, to the challenges you face, to the allies you can attract. So I think that theme needs to be underscored again and again. What it means is building the broadest base of support we can build for the kinds of activities that we have undertaken. For example, isolating the narrow sectarian extremism within Islam from the great sea, the broader sea of the Muslim world. That is a very political process involving many instruments of national strategy. Another aspect of developing national strategies is the importance of developing leverage. Leverage could come in many forms, but I was taken with the references today to the question that we don't really have an Iran policy. We are talking a lot about Iraq policy, but we don't seem to be talking much about an Iran policy, and yet there have been some interesting signals coming out from the administration and from other observers and participants in our foreign policy process about the fact that Iran is the missing subject in many of our discussions. Just imagine how different today's debate would be if we could succeed in mobilizing the Iranian street. Obviously, that's not something that we can do, but if there were a way to encourage the Iranian street to mobilize, just imagine how different the leverage equations might be in the Gulf. The second thing I take from our discussions today is that many of the things we're trying to do entail a long duration. I was struck when our speaker, Zalmay Khalilzad, in our Afghan panel this morning, made the comment that we are there for the duration. Well, where I come from, the duration is a fairly significant tenure. The duration is seeing the job through. The duration is making sure that you're going to get those cows, you're going to chase those cows, and you're not going to quit until they're back inside the corral. And that is a very significant responsibility that we've undertaken. And if you compare that and then transfer your gaze for a moment over to Iraq, you can imagine what seeing it through for the duration in Iraq will entail. I'm not arguing against it. I'm saying let's be aware of what we are talking about and how very political that responsibility will be. A number of questions will arise. Who rules Iraq? Who decides who rules? Who legitimizes who rules? Who authorizes the authority to exercise power? And I could go on. Will there be a parallel to the bond process? Will there be a UN role in rebuilding the civil infrastructure of Iraq? Who holds Iraq together in the event there are temptations from inside and outside? And you know the list. You could all come up with a better list. So we're talking about a vast responsibility. The third theme I take from today's conference is that we're talking about more than Afghanistan and Iraq. We are talking about a zone of turbulence and the containment of that turbulence and the channeling of the vast energies it represents, a zone that stretches from Northwest Africa over to Southeast Asia. And it's not just two very troubled places. Why do I say that? Because I think the globalization paradigm is at risk if we can't do better on the political side of the globalization question, resolving conflicts, draining swamps of ethnic hatred and religious extremism. And these things affect us. They affect our national interests, and that case needs to be recognized and needs to be made. These conditions in that vast zone of turbulence, which Sandy Berger referred to very eloquently, as did Senator Hagel just now, these kinds of patterns of turbulence affect us because they lead to exploitation by bad actors of all kinds, including terrorist cabals and narco-traffickers, but also regional hegemons, religious zealots, corrupt warlords who are living off the carcass of civilian societies. We have the means to stop it. We have some of the national energy and some of the focus today that we've missed during the decade of the 90s, which was sometimes called a decade of a holiday from history. We now have something of a sense of a galvanized domestic base, and we have the potential to galvanize an international base. And I think the goals that we're talking about are substantially broader than a war on terrorism. We're really talking about upgrading stability and governance in this vast zone of turbulence. Or I'll use Sandy Berger's words, we are defined by what we build and not just who we defeat. So this is a much broader agenda. We have the potentials to address that agenda, and I hope we can get about doing it. My final comment after listening to the day's comments and interactions, panels, Q's and A's and the rest, is that I think our institution, the U.S. Institute of Peace, is a major national asset in addressing all of those agendas. And let me just very briefly list some of the reasons why I feel that way and share them with you in a very brief unpaid commercial. We think of ourselves as one of the leading laboratories in this country for addressing and defining and doing research about, applied research about political solutions to problems. That includes peacemaking, it includes mediation, it includes research on best practice in a whole host of areas related to what happens when societies get into conflict and then emerge out of conflict, how to get them back on their feet. We do education in zones of conflict. We develop teaching materials for peacemakers around the world. We train soldiers, peacekeepers, policemen and women, NGOs, civil servants on conflict management. We build bridges to polarized religious communities. We bring world-class expertise on the rule of law and transitional justice to countries coming out of war situations and hopefully transitioning to some form of decency and stability. We talked just now about Iraq. Obviously, the programs of the Institute in that whole area could become, at a certain point, very relevant. We facilitate dialogue and problem-solving in war-torn places. We have information bases. We have IT resources for linking people globally. There are many tools for this war on terrorism, which, in fact, is a much broader agenda than a war on terrorism. It is a battle to build a better world, and I think our resources for that enterprise are as relevant as they have ever been. Thank you for your attendance, your participation. You're a great group, and we're delighted to have you here all day. Thank you.